Hello and welcome to The Co-working Club, a podcast for female business owners who want to work for themselves, not by themselves. I'm your host, Jessica Berry, and each week I'll be chatting to a new guest all about the realities of running your own business, sharing tips and tricks for dealing with the loneliness and isolation that comes with working from home, as well as discussing the benefits of building community through co-working. So what are you waiting for? Come and join the club. Hello, hello. Welcome back to this week's episode of The Co-working Club. I'm super happy to have you tuning in today, and I'm so excited to be sharing another guest interview. Now, I'm going to start with a question. Have you ever had one of those days in business where you felt like just giving up and throwing in the towel? I'm sure 99.9% of you listening are nodding your head right now, because building a business can be extremely testing at times, and it can get really tiring to have to keep picking ourselves up time after time. But as my guest on today's episode shares, the only difference between success and failure in business is perseverance, and Imogen Pickering has certainly persevered over the 4 years that she has been building her businesses. If you don't know her already, Imogen is the founder of two businesses, the first being a fashion brand called Imogen Apparel, which she launched back in 2015, and the most recent being Bijou Brands, a creative agency which was born during lockdown in July 2020. Imogen is known for sharing an extremely honest and transparent approach to running a business on her social channels. Back in July of this year, she created an Instagram reel which documented a very vulnerable look at some of the tougher moments that she's had within her business. It's safe to say that the reel completely blew up and has since amassed 10.5 million views, which was totally unexpected to Imogen. She went from having 4,000 followers on Instagram to just under 40,000 in a very short space of time. And due to this, she did unfortunately attract some negative attention online. This is only one of the occasions in Imogen's journey so far where she has had to pick herself up, learn from the experience, and keep pushing on. So I wanted to get her on the podcast to chat all about building resilience as a business owner. In the episode, I chat to Imogen all about why she's so passionate about opening up and showcasing a more authentic and transparent approach to running a business, why she believes that failure is such an important part of running a business, and how she has learned to come to terms with setbacks over time, as well as how the law of attraction allowed her to remain positive even throughout the most testing of times in her business. I absolutely loved getting to chat to Imogen in this episode. It was honestly such an inspiring conversation that will hopefully help anyone listening who might be going through a tough time at the moment find the motivation to pick themselves up and keep going, because you have got this. So without further ado, here is today's conversation. Enjoy. Hi Imogen, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm really excited to dive into today's conversation, but do you want to start by telling us a little bit about yourself, your career history so far, and the background behind your businesses, plural?
Yeah, of course. So I recorded a podcast last week on another podcast, and I had the same thing that I was like, I feel like I need to practice my kind of intro, because it changes every time, and I don't really have like a very kind of like clear cut story into kind of like how I came about to, you know, having two businesses, because I've always said, like, I always tell people that I'm a kind of like accidental business owner. Mm-hmm. I never really thought that it's something that I would do. It was never really like a plan. It was never on my radar. So I must apologize in advance, because this is like quite a lengthy story. I'm giving you the full context.
That's okay. We want that.
Yeah, because I feel like I don't know, I'm completely self-taught in my businesses, and I feel like everything that I do now is very much aligned and kind of dictated by everything that I've kind of experienced and gone through the last like few years. So it all really kind of my story, so to speak, kind of starts like back at school. So I went to a very kind of academic all girls school. All of my friends are highly intelligent and very academic. And out of my friendship group, like I was the creative one. And at the time, I thought that I was thick. Like I just thought I was thick because I was creative. And I just remember thinking at the time, like that, you know, I just wasn't on a par with these other women in my peer group. And because it was because of my schooling that I can, you know, I can look back on that and look at that subjectively now. But at the time, you know, they all went off to university to do their kind of vocational studies in, you know, law and accounting and all these amazing things. So I went off to do fine art. And then after a year of fine art, I realized that wasn't my thing either. I was feeling a little bit lost. And then like literally, I loved university. I loved my friends. I loved being there. So, you know, after a year when this was just not going well, I was like, well, I don't want to go home. So I picked a kind of degree at random, which turned out to be the greatest stab in the dark I ever took, because that was in media and communications. So it was very kind of marketing based, you know, sociology, psychology, like all of the stuff that I love and am obsessed with and do in my day to day now. That was my very first kind of intro into that world. So I was at uni for 4 years in total. And then when I came home, I live in Jersey, which is a very, very small British island. Not really much going on here other than the finance industry. There's a huge finance industry here. And because of my degree, my kind of postgraduate job options were marketing based, really. And the only marketing jobs that I could get here were in finance. So I went into finance, and that's when I kind of started my professional marketing background. I was there for about 18 months, you know, did some Chartered Institute of Marketing qualifications through work. And after a while, I was like, no, this is still not my thing. Still feel a bit lost. But at the time is when I founded my first business. It wasn't really a business then, but it was a time when Instagram was very new. It was kind of around 2015. And I don't know if you remember, but there was just this surge of like lace bralettes like everywhere. They just weren't a thing before this time. And when I was working finance, I saw them and I was like, oh, they're quite pretty. Like, I'll try and make one. Tried to make one, succeeded amazingly. And then kind of it got to the point where friends were asking me to make them, then friends of friends. And I was like, right, I need to do this properly. So I went and got my business license and then just started kind of like selling this. It was called Imogen Designs at the time, selling it through Instagram. I think I had like a little shitty Wix website, but it was never the plan to grow that. My plan was always to go traveling. I had in my head I was going traveling. I was moving to the other side of the world because I hadn't found what I was good at or what I wanted to do. So I was just going to pack up and move to Australia and never come back. Anyway, so I kind of grew that whilst working in finance, and then just as a bit of kind of pocket money to take whilst I was traveling. But then the week before I left to go away, I made, I think, just as much money doing that as I did in my finance job. And I was like, okay, right, this could be a thing. Anyway, so I went traveling, went for about a year, and then decided to come home. And then when I decided to come home, I was like, right, I was doing quite well at this thing before I left. So I'm just going to try and go in full time, do it properly and try and build a business. And then at that time, you know, during the time that I was away, this is when Instagram was very new, but then, you know, influencer marketing was taking off and you could buy bralettes in Primark for a fiver and you could no longer get the free exposure and stuff that I was doing before. So I relaunched, spent loads of time with new designs, and it was absolutely tumbleweed. And I was like, oh my God, I'm supposed to be making a living off of this. And I think I got, you know, a handful of sales in a month. So I had to kind of go back to the drawing board. And that's when I got a part-time job just to kind of like pay the bills and was like, right, I need to really grow and scale this. So I did that for a while. I kind of took some money from my savings to put into the business. And then I kept growing that. And then it got to a point where I wasn't doing well in the business and I wasn't doing well in my part-time job because my responsibilities in both, I couldn't juggle them. So I had to kind of take the leap into doing business full-time and leave the job before I felt ready. So took some savings to kind of live off whilst I tried building that. And then fast forward to March 2020 time, lockdown. And, you know, I was getting, you know, it was growing, but, you know, my savings are running out. And I was like, this has got to be making me money. I really don't want to go back to work for someone else. So I was having a conversation with my coach, and she was like, right, how else can you make money to just kind of pay the bills whilst you continue growing your fashion brand? And at that time, it was lockdown, and there was this surgence of new businesses and, you know, candle companies and homeware companies. They were just popping up everywhere. And I didn't realize quite how privileged I was that I had my background in marketing, my understanding in branding and all of that when it comes to business, until I saw all of these businesses popping up. And I was like, oh no, like, you're doing it wrong. Like, let me help you. Like, let me help you with your branding. Let me help you with your logos, etc. So I had a couple of friends at the time who were launching new businesses, and I was helping them with their branding. So when she asked me the question, you know, how else can you make money? I was like, well, I'm doing this for fun at the moment. This could be something that I could make money from. And so in June 2020, Bijou Brands was born. And, you know, fast forward, that is over a year ago now. And, you know, it's gone wild. It's literally grown far greater than I could have ever imagined. I recently took on a team member last week. So there's now two of us. And the fashion side of things is very much like on the back burner at the moment. But because I've had that experience growing my own fashion brand, and I can relate to those feelings of trying to grow a fashion brand, a lot of my clients now are me 4 years ago. And I think that's just so, so nice and so lovely that I can now literally serve women, the type of women that I was, you know, a couple of years ago when I was trying to grow my fashion brand. So yeah, As I said, I apologize. There is no long or short way of saying what I do. And I've just looked at the time and it's only 10 minutes long. I'm so sorry. So yeah, that is a roundabout way of how we have got to speaking to each other today.
Yeah, and it's so good to find out your journey in so much detail, because I didn't know the full picture. And like you said, things have gone crazy with Bijou over the past year. And if someone was to stumble across your Instagram account, they probably wouldn't think that the business is only a year and a few months old. You know, you look very established. Yeah. Like you said, you took on your first team member this week, which was super exciting. Yeah. So yeah, it's really great to find out kind of where that all stemmed from, really.
Yeah, and I'm so passionate as well about kind of, I want to tell people the truth, and I want to tell people, you know, that it's not just been like an easy ride, because as you already know, like, I think I'm so passionate about stamping out the bullshit around growing a business. And I think it's so easy to look at people and be like, oh my God, like, it looks amazing, they're doing really well. But actually there's so much, well, in all of them, and especially in my case, there's so much backstory. And you know, yes, my business is only a year old and it's doing amazingly, but I had 3 years of trying to get another business off the ground before that to be able to succeed in the second one. Mm-hmm. So I'm that's why I kind of go off on a tangent telling people I'm an open book, like, because I personally find it so helpful when other people are like that with me. So yeah, I'm an oversharer, what can I say?
I love it. And the main topic of today's podcast is all about building resilience in business. And, you know, you've just talked about several occasions there where you've, you know, had to really kind of keep pushing on even through the hard times and kind of build up that level of resilience. So, you know, even before you've got to this stage, like, as you said, people could see where you're at now and be kind of envious and jealous of the position you're in, but it has taken real grit and dedication to get to this point.
Yeah, 100%.
So like you just mentioned, you pride yourself on showing the real kind of raw sides to running a business on your personal Instagram account, that is. Mm-hmm. So why is that so important to you?
I think because, as I said before, like, what I kind of put out there is quite selfishly what I'm inspired by. I find it so inspiring when I've got someone who is being totally honest and raw and open with me, and who is a couple of years ahead of me.
Like, I find that so inspiring and so motivating. And I also remember a time when I first started, particularly being where I live. Like, I'm in, as I said, I'm in Jersey. It's a very, very small place. And obviously the pool of people that you can connect with is a lot smaller as well. And fashion, you know, entrepreneurship, like, it's not, it's getting better here, but, you know, 4 years ago when I first kind of decided that this is what I wanted to do, like, it was, it just wasn't here. And I remember feeling really alone and really kind of disheartened that there was no one else here like me or that I could relate to. So that's when I kind of first started, you know, being like, right, I'm going to document my journey on my Instagram so that I can A, make connections for myself and kind of grow a wider network, but then just being there as a point of reference, an honest point of reference for people who are going through the same thing as me, because I knew that I couldn't be the only one feeling like that. So mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can relate to it so much. But mm-hmm. Have you always found it quite easy to be open and transparent online, or is it something that you've got more comfortable with over time?
It's difficult because, as I said, like, I am naturally, I am an oversharer. Like, I am an oversharer with my friends, with my family. Like, I love to talk. But obviously, being online is a totally different, it's a totally different space. And I would say that I still don't feel comfortable sharing online. Like, I still kind of second guess everything I put out there. It's not something that I necessarily enjoy doing or comes naturally to me. But I know and understand and have reaped the benefits of doing that, whether that's growing my business, making better connections, you know, even being invited on this podcast. I probably wouldn't, I've been on a handful of podcasts over the last couple of weeks, and these opportunities won't have happened if I hadn't have put the content out that I do put out. So it's not something that comes naturally to me, but the benefits of doing that, and more, most importantly, the amount that it's going to help people, is, I think, what helps me to continue to do it.
Mm-hmm. And have you found that it's allowed you to connect better with your audience as well? Because, you know, opening up and sharing that level of vulnerability, I guess it allows people to feel like they can maybe connect with you on that kind of deeper level.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, there's it's quite funny because I didn't really think that it would carry over into kind of my professional life, so with work and clients that I take on. But I have a contact form on the Bijou website, and one of the things is, why do you want to work with us specifically? And like 60% of the people are saying is because, you know, the founder is so open and honest, I can relate to her with XYZ. And that's really interesting to me because that wasn't my intention. But obviously, you know, as you say, it's an open door for those connections. And it's, I think, especially in the kind of digital space, when you have an online business that's not necessarily unique, you know, there's other people doing it. The thing that's going to set you apart and how you differentiate from your competitors is you and your transparency and your honesty, whether that's, you know, my audience can connect to me about with what I talk about with anxiety, or the fact that I drink too much wine, or the fact that, you know, I love being by the beach, like all of these things that I put out there that's authentically me, they're touch points for my audience to connect with and choose to work with me or buy from me over my competitors who perhaps are doing very similar things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so interesting. And I wonder whether, was there ever any hesitation, you know, to share maybe like the tough times that you were going through in business and, you know, any of the lows? Because I'm sure some people would maybe think, oh, you know, would it put off clients working with me? But obviously that example that you've just shared has shown that it has done the exact opposite.
Yeah, and it's I need to get my phone out now because I'm about to reference an influencer and I can't remember her name. Victoria Spence, she was talking about something on her stories yesterday, because she shared a post for World Mental Health Day, and it's kind of all these pictures, and she's put captions saying, you know, this is how I felt when this was taken. And then she got in her stories and she was like, I had this really irrational thought when I posted that, that some of you were going to be like, you know, you speak about being raw and open and honest, and we didn't know that you were going through that until you've just said it. And she was like, it was really irrational thought, but you know, I came up with an answer for that. And it's the same answer that I would give you now, is that I think there's obviously so much power in sharing those things. But I think when you share it before you are personally healed from it, then it becomes a bit icky. Then it doesn't feel right, because there's no answer to it. So, you know, there's things that have gone wrong in my business that I'm still not ready to talk about, because I still haven't personally healed from it. I haven't figured out an answer for it yet as to why it happened. Whereas, you know, there are other things that have happened and I've gone through, and actually I can talk about the positives from it. So yeah, I do think there's a fine line. It's not about, you know, just pressing live whenever you're having a breakdown over your business. Like, I think it has to be curated, and you have to share it in a way that you know is going to be helpful, rather than a way that's almost asking for sympathy or doing it for likes. You know, it needs to be intentional. And obviously that intention needs to align to whatever you're trying to kind of achieve with your business and your brand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so true. Because I know in the past I've posted, you know, having a rubbish day or feeling a bit down. And, you know, it's really nice that people send messages and say, like, hope you're okay. Like, you know, try and pick you up. And I think that's sometimes time when I realise, oh, wait, no, I wasn't doing that for sympathy. You know, I don't want you necessarily to send me messages saying that you hope I'm okay. But I just wanted to make, you know, other business owners know that if they're having a bad day, they're not the only ones.
Yeah, exactly. 100%.
So one of the big things that I wanted to chat about today was, back in July, I think it was, you posted a reel which showcased some of the tougher sides to running a business. Mm-hmm. And it's safe to say that it totally blew up. I just checked before we hopped on and it has got 10.5 million views, which is terrifying. Did you ever imagine it gaining that kind of traction before you posted it? And what do you think it was about it that captured so many people's attention, if there was any kind of rhyme and reason to it?
Literally not at all did I think that that was going to happen. It still blows my mind, because I still don't really get it. I'm not a social media person. Obviously, I know how social media works, but I'm not a strategist or a manager. I can't tell you kind of the ins and outs of how really these things work. But in answer to your first question, I did not anticipate that happening at all. I think it gained so much traction, and I was having a think about this. I think because the entrepreneurial space on Instagram in general, there's a lot of bullshit. There's a lot of 10K months, six-figure businesses, multi, you know, serial entrepreneur. And I think what I posted, for anyone who hasn't seen it and wants context, it's literally a 5-second video of me crying, clips of me crying, which I will explain in context afterwards. But I think because it was different, it's different to what people are used to seeing in that space. And I think that's why it gained the traction. It's like when you got your first influencers, your first body positive influencers. It was different because everyone knew influencers to be perfect, airbrushed, thin, beautiful. And then, you know, the first kind of body positive influencers came along, and they grew astronomically, because they were like, this doesn't fit in the space. What is this? So I think that is why it gained the traction, because you don't get a lot of that in the entrepreneurial and business space. But of course, and I think this is one of your next questions, so I'm sorry if I'm jumping the gun here, but I think obviously it did gain a lot of traction, and you know, it gained me maybe kind of 30,000 followers in 2 weeks or something ridiculous.
Wow.
Which I wasn't ready for. And then obviously with that growth, that unexpected growth, comes unwelcomed and unsolicited opinions, which I hadn't experienced before. And I mean, the response was overwhelmingly positive. I had to kind of set aside a time every single day to go through my DMs from people email, like messaging me saying that I'd really helped them, that, you know, this, it was amazing. Like, I'm so grateful that I did this. But then every so often I would get a comment calling me a narcissist or an attention seeker, or why would you get your phone out when you're crying? And, you know, this is an insult to people who have genuine breakdowns. And I mean, obviously it was 1%. So, you know, I went from kind of 4,000 followers to, you know, 30,000 overnight. And I think it's probably, you know, I didn't have any of that before. So it's probably 1 in 5,000 people that are thinking this. And obviously, you know, the wider your audience, the more chances you are of receiving stuff like that. It was, yeah, a new experience. And I felt like I dealt with it the right way. I mean, I posted an IGTV afterwards. So I was like, I wanted to explain myself why I had so many clips of me crying. And basically, I don't know if you saw it, but it was, I tried to launch my first online course at some point last year. And I did it for all the wrong reasons. I wasn't ready. I wasn't prepared. I was juggling being fully booked with client work, and it basically all fell apart. And I had seen some coaches doing kind of behind the scene vlogs of online launches. So I thought, I'll do the same. And what that content ended up being was just footage of me in tears. So that is why, I had that content, because a lot of the comments were like, why are you doing your job if you're just in tears all the time? Like, this must be what running a business is like, and just calling, like, horrible comments. So yeah, that's how I ended up dealing with it. I posted a kind of IGTV addressing the trolls and why I had that footage. And I think you never really know how you're going to respond to that. And I think it's something you can't really anticipate until you are in it and you're dealing with it. And I think there's also no way of telling people how to deal with it. I think everyone deals with criticism differently, and it's a very personal and unique thing to each individual. So I wouldn't want to kind of, I mean, I'm jumping the gun again and answering another one of your questions. I wouldn't want to kind of, you know, give a overarching advice as to how to deal with these things when they come up, because I do think it's a very personal thing. But for me, that's what felt right. You know, I tried responding to some of the comments, but that just added fuel to the fire. I tried kind of deleting them, and then I ended up turning the comments off altogether and then just posting that video, because I was like, I feel like this feels right for me. And I know for next time now how I would deal with that and how I can take some of the power back in that situation.
Yeah. And what a situation and experience it must have been.
Yeah. Yeah, wild.
Looking back now with hindsight, do you look back at it as a positive experience? You know, so many business owners are really working hard to try to get their reels to go viral. So, you know, did it live up to that kind of expectation, and was it worth it, I suppose?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite interesting, because I was speaking on my stories today, actually, because obviously what I've been doing and the stuff I've been sharing, I'm like, I've been wanting to reach a wider audience for so long, and, you know, grow my follower account for so long. And it's funny, because it's proper imposter syndrome and, like, up, you know, upper limit problems. Now that I've got that, I'm panicking. I'm like, what do I do with it? And it's just the same. It's this upper limit problem, isn't it? That you think that you can achieve a certain level of success, if you will, in inverted commas. And then when you get there, your ego is like, well, you know, this is not what we do. We're not ready for this. And it freaks out, and it wants to kind of go back and stay in your comfort zone. So that's what I'm experiencing at the moment still. You know, I've had a few reels get a couple of million since, and I've kind of plateaued now. I think I'm at just under kind of 40,000, bearing in mind I had 4,000 maybe kind of like a month or two ago.
Wow.
Maybe a little bit longer, but it's been, you know, at wild growth I was not prepared for, but something that I was probably wanting for a while. And now that I'm there, I'm still learning. It's a new phase of my business journey, and, you know, my journey with a personal brand. It's a new phase, and I'm still adjusting. So yes, it is a positive experience, but it's something that I'm kind of, I don't think I'm at the other side yet. I'm still feeling a bit kind of uneasy and a bit shaken by it. Not shaken, that's not the right word. I haven't adapted to the kind of new phase yet, I would say. I'm still kind of trying to figure out what that looks like. But I think every experience in business, there's going to be a period of discomfort where you kind of grow into that next version of yourself. And it's not something that you just become okay with overnight. I think there is teething problems. There's, you know, time to grow into it because your ego is like, Han, we're not this person. Stay comfortable and safe where you were before. So yeah, in answer to your question, it was a positive experience, but yeah, I don't feel like I'm comfortable with it all yet, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can totally imagine. And I think so many people will probably just put the emphasis on the positives. You know, you're getting your content seen by lots of people, you're increasing your followers. But, you know, from my point of view, to go through such wild growth, maybe it would feel as though you're, you know, shifting from having this really safe, small community of people who only love what you're doing to suddenly, you know, it's kind of invaded in some ways, isn't it? By people who, they don't know the full picture. They, you know, are only just getting to know you. They don't know what you've been through in the past. So, yeah, I can imagine the kind of days and weeks that follow that. There's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, it's pressure because, as you say, I feel a greater sense of responsibility now because, I mean, I'm a people pleaser at heart. Whereas before I would kind of post stuff that felt natural. Now that I've got that audience, I'm kind of like, you know, I've never, ever looked at my analytics and my insights until kind of this past month. And now it's not a good thing. I'm looking, you know, analyzing when the followers drop off and what content does well and what's not. And it's a new responsibility that, yeah, I'm still kind of learning to deal with.
Yeah, that makes total sense. So in a recent Instagram post, you spoke about how in order to be a good businesswoman, you have to be okay with failing. So what have some of your biggest failures been in business, if you don't mind sharing, and how did you learn to come to terms with them?
So I was having a think about this, and if we weren't recording a podcast, I'd probably be very open and honest with you. But a lot of the things that I would probably consider failures, A, include other people, or B, as I said before, I haven't kind of healed from, would you say? And I haven't really kind of figured out. It's not something I feel ready to kind of like talk about and share yet. But I was having a think about this, and going back to what I said before, I think probably a failure that has felt the most real was when I tried to launch that online course. And I had launched, God, when was it? Yes, I had launched Bijou in July. And obviously it was so successful straight off the bat. And I just got so kind of wound up in the numbers. Mm-hmm. And because I had been, you know, slogging for 3 years, trying to get a business off the ground, trying to make ends meet. And then suddenly I had a business that was very profitable straight away. And I got so caught up in the numbers that I was like, right, I'm gonna, I can't remember what the figure was, but it was, you know, a couple of, I was aiming for, I don't know, maybe £50,000 in profit by the end of the year or something like that. And to be able to do that, I had to be fully booked with clients. And then also I thought, right, I'm gonna launch an online course. Because as you know, like that's quite a significant spike in revenue when you launch them. I'd never done one before. And I invested in a course on how to do it. And cut a long story short, I thought that I could do 3 months of work in 3 weeks. I thought I could do it whilst being fully booked with client work and whilst still running a fashion brand. And it kind of all fell apart. You know, I had, I let clients down, I let myself down, I let my health and well-being down. I wasn't sleeping, eating, like it was just awful. Because I was putting so much pressure on this financial goal, which, you know, in hindsight, I think is I was doing it for all of the wrong reasons. It was totally selfish. I wasn't doing it for the benefit and cause of my clients and the people that I would have had on this course. I was selfishly just doing it to tick a financial goal. But that taught me so much, so, so much about my processes, you know, my workflow, my client relationships. And even though, and you know, that's when I had all that content for the reel of me in tears, even though it felt like an astronomical fail at the time, I still attribute that to being one of the pivotal turning points in my journey as a businesswoman and becoming the kind of businesswoman that I want to be, because I learned so many lessons from it that I always try and kind of say to everyone now is that I really try and welcome, me personally, I really try and welcome failure with open arms now in my business, because it does feel shit at the time. It really, really does. There's nothing good about failing. But it's trying to reframe what we were taught at school, that failure was just like this horrible, horrible thing. It was the worst thing in the world. Whereas actually, the failure that I've experienced since being self-employed and being a businesswoman has always been pivotal in my growth as a human and as a businesswoman, because I take so much from it that it's just, they're invaluable life lessons to me. So yeah, whenever things crop up now or I fail at something, I'm like, all right, okay, this does feel shit, but I'm not going to be able to become the businesswoman that I want to be without going through that and having that experience.
Yeah, it's so true, because every failure, in inverted commas, comes with lessons and learnings. Mm-hmm. But do you let yourself kind of wallow in that failure for a period of time, or are you able to pick yourself back up straight away?
No, I am. I can imagine if my other half was still in the other room, he'd be nodding away. Like, I am an emotional woman. Like, I cry at the drop of a hat. And, you know, when things go wrong, I will sob. But I think that's also healthy, because if you suppress those emotions, you don't ever deal with them, and they come, they surface at another time. So yes, when I do let myself wallow in it, and, you know, I will feel those emotions 100% and just let them be and not try and suppress them or force them away. Because when you're welcoming these emotions, they normally go quicker as well. So, I mean, you know, the things that I would say have been my biggest failures in the last 12 months, you know, I've really wallowed in self-pity for maybe 2-3 days. That's my kind of maximum, not what I allow myself, but what I feel like I need. I will literally let myself feel shit about it until it's out of my system and I'm ready to go again. Because, you know, I have tried that perseverance and, you know, knock it on the head and keep going. And I don't know, I can only speak from personal experience. I find that when I do that, it just resurfaces another time, or, you know, comes out in another form, whether that's, you know, being aggressive to my boyfriend or being short with a client or getting upset over, you know, spilt milk. I really think that it's very healthy to really feel those feelings and pick yourself back up when you feel ready.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's good advice, because as business owners, you know, we do feel so connected to our businesses and things do feel personal. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, feeling those emotions and allowing yourself to feel that way just shows that you really care, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
So do you have any advice for picking yourself up after one of these failure moments, or any words of wisdom for any business owners who might feel like currently throwing in the towel? Because I know it can feel like you can, you know, go through certain periods where you get knocked back after knocked back. And it is hard to pick yourself up back up again after those times.
Yeah, 100%. And I always, and I mean, this is something that my coach taught me that I just find invaluable, that, you know, when things do go really wrong and I feel like throwing the towel in, what inspires me to keep going is my future self and thinking of the woman that I really want to become and imagining that she is coming back into the past. You know, she's in the future. She's already done all of that. She's coming back to the past and she's saying, Imogen, we get there. this is what we do, and actually really trying to tap in to my future self as a person and think, what would she do in this situation? And, you know, sometimes she comes back and she says, yeah, it's fine. Like, just cry for a couple of days. But when you feel okay, we're going to do this. And I find that really, really powerful, is to kind of tap into that mindset as if, you know, she's done it. She exists. She made it. We celebrate. She comes back and she says, you know, we celebrated that goal together. Like, we made it. So that's something I find really, really helpful. Yeah, that's probably, that would be my number one point. Key point of advice, I think, for picking yourself back up again.
Yeah, I love that idea. And it is kind of looking to yourself for that guidance and, mm-hmm. you know, that reassurance, because ultimately is what we have to do as business owners. You know, if we work by ourselves, there's no one else really, you know, who's going to give you that strength to pick yourself back up again.
Exactly.
Friends and family can support us and, you know, offer advice and things like that. But ultimately, on a day-to-day basis, it does need you to come back with that energy and, you know, ready to challenge whatever's thrown at you and, you know, just keep showing up.
It is resilience. It's, as you say, I'm giving this advice as someone who has, you know, done this for a couple of years now. And I remember at the start, it just feeling like such an uphill slog.
Yeah.
And I think the beginning is the hardest, and picking yourself up at the beginning is the hardest. But it's like training a muscle, so like a resilience muscle. Over time it gets stronger and you can pick things up that are heavier. And actually it's just about getting your mindset, reframing whatever is going on in your mind to be able to pick yourself back up, and then remembering that for next time and just practicing it over and over and over. Because I do think the longer you get on in whatever journey you're in, it does get easier over time to be able to kind of look at things subjectively and pick yourself back up and carry on. Because the only difference really between failing and succeeding is perseverance. It's literally the only difference. You will only fail if you stop trying.
Yes.
If you keep going, then you can't fail. You'll get there eventually. But it's just, it's a battle with the mind over how long you can persevere.
Yeah, that's so true. And running a business doesn't necessarily get easier, but it gets easier to deal with those setbacks, doesn't it? The more that you go through those challenges 100%. And pick yourself back up again. So leading on a little bit, I guess, from the last question, I know that you are a big believer in the law of attraction, and you attribute a lot of the success that you've gained this year, put it down to manifestation. But how have you managed to, you know, keep a positive mindset and keep that belief that things are going to work out?
Yeah, it's hard. So it's quite funny, because so the law of attraction and manifestation is a very kind of, it's quite a new concept to me. I wouldn't say that I'm kind of an expert at it, but I have been practicing it, you know, this year. And as a result, I've kind of become a bit more, I'm laughing because I'm a bit more woo-woo now. And my woo-woo talk always comes out when I'm drinking with my girlfriends. And it came out on Friday. We had a chat and we were talking about what I'm about to tell you about. And I couldn't explain it. So it's the secret is the book that, you know, the first manifestation book that everyone normally reads.
Yeah.
And there is a second book called The Greatest Secret, also written by Rhonda Byrne. And I don't want to try and explain it, because I was trying to explain this after a couple of wines to my friends the other day, and I was just mortified because I couldn't explain it. But she's essentially says, because obviously for the law of attraction to work, you have to be in a very kind of like happy state all of the times. So that's why she talks about practicing gratitude and all of that malarkey. And The Greatest Secret talks about, I don't want to try and explain it because I sound like such an idiot. It talks about really connecting with kind of like your awareness and your kind of true self, which is, it's your natural state is pure happiness. When you take away the mind and you take away the body, it's pure happiness. And I'm not going to try and explain it any further. If you are interested in finding out about that, look at The Greatest Secret by Rhonda Byrne. I actually have the audiobook. I listened to that on Audible because I really like the production. There's loads of like spiritual music and it's all really lovely. So I find that really, really helpful, actually. I've listened to it twice through because it takes a bit of work to get your head around it because it is very spiritual and is very woo-woo. But I do find that really helpful. And then also going back to what I said before, like just having that faith in the end goal and having that faith that my future self exists, I also find really, really powerful and motivational to keep going. But then in the same vein as what we're saying before, I think with, you know, as I said, I've only really been practicing this for maybe about a year. So I haven't got that much experience under my belt. But, and I shared a reel on this actually, one of the things that did go really, really wrong in my business, I thought, I was like, oh my God, this shit doesn't work because this has just gone really, really wrong. But actually fast forward 3 or 4 months, I've realized that, you know, what I put out to the universe as my goal, the thing that went wrong wasn't actually aligned with what I was trying to achieve. And it didn't, that wasn't blatantly obvious until a few months later. So because I've had that experience, I have more faith in the end result and I have more faith in the process because something came up and I thought, why the hell am I practicing this? Because this doesn't work. And then actually a few months later, things started showing up that were completely aligned with my end goal and what I was trying to achieve. And it was obvious that, you know, I was chasing something that perhaps wasn't right for me. So yeah, in answer to your question, buy the book and then having faith in the end result. And then also just, yeah, having faith in it and just keep practicing it and then just seeing what comes up over time. The Secret is very woo-woo and a lot of people don't really get on with that. I have read one since called The Last Law of Attraction Book You Will Ever Read, which is very helpful because he talks about the science behind it all, you know, yeah, the woo-woo kind of stuff. Like I do like some of it, but sometimes I just need the hard facts. Like I need the science. And it's a very to the point way of how it works scientifically. So that is a book that I would definitely recommend as well.
Amazing. And yeah, I guess it's just thinking about it as, you know, this is a long-term commitment to go after your dreams and goals and make them happen. You exactly. know, you can't expect to get everything that you want in a matter of weeks or months. You know, you have to persevere through the hard times, learn from, you know, the challenges and the failures along the way. And yeah, just keep believing that you will get there in the end.
Exactly.
So to start wrapping up, what key bits of advice, I suppose, would you give to another business owner, maybe who's working towards some big goals or going after those dreams, but aren't sure whether they're going to get there? Any last words of advice?
So, I mean, as we've covered, really, it's a mindset battle as to whether or not you're going to get there. And, you know, I attribute all of my success really to my mindset coach, Sam Laura Brown, who is literally has just changed my mindset forever. And in terms of kind of like goal setting and stuff, what she has taught me is to always set my goals above and beyond what I actually believe is possible and reframing achieving goals as a kind of personal development tool. And actually what you have to go through to be able to achieve those goals is a far greater achievement than just kind of ticking a box. And I've actually recently, and I'm sorry that I'm about to do this, but I'm about to plug one of my products because so I've recently put this system, what I use for goal setting, into a kind of downloadable Notion template, which you can buy from the Bijou website, which is bijoubrands.co.uk. And it's the goal planner. And in there, so what she has taught me to do over time is to set goals. When you set goals above and beyond what you actually think is possible, you then work on changing your belief system to be able to achieve that goal. And then once you believe that you achieve it, you will start doing things outside of your comfort zone, progressing as a person, like reaching your highest potential, showing up as your best self. And you start praising yourself for doing that rather than achieving the end goal. And actually, as a result, you then end up achieving so much more than if you'd just set a realistic goal. So for example, I set a financial goal for this year and, you know, we're in Q4 now and I'm nowhere near my impossible goal, but I have made more money in the first, what are we, the first three quarters than I ever anticipated I would in a year, because I have been aiming for that thing, that's that top line number that's so far out of my comfort zone and what I believe I could do. Because I've been going for that, I've actually ended up achieving higher than if I was to set a realistic goal at the start of the year. Mm-hmm. And I think that's such a powerful way of goal setting and, you know, letting go of the goal and being like, look how much I am growing and achieving in pursuit of that goal as a result. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, you know, as a business owner, such a valuable way of goal setting, because you're focusing on the growth, you're not focusing on the goal.
Yeah, that's so true. And I encounter so many business owners who are wary of setting goals because, you know, it gives something to measure yourself against and, you know, in inverted commas again, gives you something to fail against.
Yeah.
But, you know, like you just said, it gives you something to really focus on and push and drive towards, so that, you know, even if you don't hit that end number or whatever it might be, you can still look at the progress that you've made and celebrate that and give yourself a pat on the back.
Exactly. And being a businesswoman and owning a business is, like I always say, it's the best tool for personal growth you can have. Like, if you actually took a step back and, you know, even if you're listening and you've had a business for 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, like if you actually wrote down and took a step back at all of the things that you've learned, achieved, overcome, like, it's massive. I don't think there's any other kind of, well, I was going to say, I don't think there's any other way of, you know, that kind of growth, but maybe, you know, with motherhood and stuff there is. I haven't experienced that yet, but I just think it's so testing and trying at times, but it's, you learn so much and you grow so much, and you have to become a better person every single day for your business to grow. And I just think that's invaluable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say this earlier actually in one of the questions, that yeah, it's, you put so much emphasis on, you know, developing as a person, as a business mm-hmm. owner, and I'm a completely different person today, I feel like, than when I first took the leap 4 years ago. And
yeah,
it forces you out of your comfort zone, which I too believe is a really good place to be.
Yeah,
you know, you're out there alone a lot of the time, making decisions, you know, making difficult decisions, learning from mistakes and investing in yourself. So yeah, I totally totally agree that it's one of the best things you can ever do for self-development.
100% 100%
Amazing. So to wrap up officially, the question that I ask all of my guests, if location wasn't a factor, which three fellow business owners would you like to be in your co-working club?
I love this question. Like, I love it so much, especially because, yeah, I'm in Jersey, so location is a problem. But I'd have Sian Whitefoot, who is a freelance fashion designer. She owns Sian's Studio. So if anyone's in fashion and needs a fashion designer, look up Sian's Studio. We met online actually in a work capacity when she was helping me grow my brand, and she's now one of my very good friends for life. So I would have her without question. I'd also have Siobhan Dudley, who is the founder of the Napco. If you haven't heard of the Napco before, you have to. Like, beautiful pajamas. They launched in, I think, 2020 or just before, and has again just seen astronomical growth, and we've worked together in a work capacity as well, and she's just super, super inspiring. And I would also have Lucy Hitchcock, who is the founder of Sassy Digital and partner in Wine. I'm sure a lot of your listeners would have heard of her and her brands as well. So yeah, without question, I would have those three.
Amazing. That sounds like a right little squad.
Oh my God. I now just can't stop thinking about it now. I'm really sad that it's not real.
Oh, yeah. We've actually had Lucy on the podcast before.
Have
and
you?
It was great to chat to her.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for chatting to me today, Imogen. It has been amazing to delve into your business journey and everything that you've experienced so far along the way.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. It's honestly a pleasure.
If you enjoy this podcast, please do subscribe so you keep up to date with all of future episodes. And if you could possibly leave a review, it would really help us in this early stage of launching the podcast.
Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you back here next Monday.